is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We are live at the Pint downtown, Jasper and 109th Street for Nation Radio. And Connor, what's that score now? Is it 4-2 McGill over U of A?
Yeah, 4-2 right now.
Okay, I'd ask you that.
Just starting the third here.
Oh, okay. I asked you that earlier. You weren't there. What happened there, buddy?
Well, we've got a new person in the studio, on the station here, so I had to introduce myself.
You know? What's his name?
Her name is Sammy. She's on Virgin Radio. So.
Okay, say no more, Connor.
How to talk to the weekend girl,
I was 20 once, buddy. You just, you know, just keep us on the air and it'll all be good.
Of course.
We are Nation Radio. The Oilers are playing the Flames tonight, so we've had an opportunity to talk to Matt Fenwick from Battle of Alberta, and we also want to get to Kent Wilson, Flames Nation. We had him on about 4 weeks ago, and things were looking dire, and I was poking at him a little bit, and you know, the hockey gods don't like that, and as it turned out, the Flames turned it around and had a great run. And this weekend is very big for tonight's a big game, and then, of course, for the next five games afterwards, the Flames, if they run the table, they've got a real shot. And we'll talk to Kent Simpson, Team 1260 analyst, about last night's crazy game. Did you see any of that? It was on Shaw, Channel 10. It's on again tonight. And, of course, Team 1260 has the broadcast 7:30 this evening. And Ryan Nugent-Hopkins was the star in the third period. I'll tell you what, that young Oil King team played their hearts out, especially with a very strong second period. And one of the stars for the Oil Kings was Keegan Lowe. Man, does he look like his dad in terms of how he plays and his style, even the way he turns. It's genetic. There's no doubt about it. And I do follow the draft, but I haven't paid much attention to the names that have been outside the first round. I don't know where Keegan Lowe is going to go in the draft, but he's a guy who's very interesting, and I think we should spend a little bit more time talking about Dylan Rock and Keegan Lowe and those Edmonton Oil Kings. We'll do that with Kent Simpson here before the top of the hour. The game tonight's going to be an interesting one because the Flames do need it, and the Oilers are basically running out the string. I think if you're an Edmonton Oiler or an Oilers fan, you would hope for a better effort than the one we saw against St. Louis on Thursday night. It was a 4-0 contest. In the last eight games, the Oilers have been outscored 34-7. I don't think you can really fault them there. They just don't have the horses. And with so many injuries and so many rookies in the lineup now, the top line tonight from a Dan Tenser tweet is Hartikainen and Eberle playing with, I think it's Vandevelde, who's the top line center. So that gives you an idea about where exactly the Edmonton Oilers are going for the next few games. They're at game number 75, so they're seven away. Do we have Kent on the phone now?
Yeah, he's here.
Okay. Hey, Kent, how you doing, man?
Good, how you doing?
Good. We talked, 4 weeks ago, and things were looking a little more dire than they are now. I think I asked you if they were buyers or sellers in the Flames at the deadline. What's turned it around? Is it just they really have a desperation and they're playing together and they've really got secondary scoring? Are those the reasons?
Well, I think we sort of went over it a couple of weeks ago when I talked. When it was really dire was in December when the team, after a pretty dreadful November, they were in 14th at one point in December. It didn't look good. And that's when Daryl Sutter got fired. They turned it around actually around mid-January. And really what happened was the Flames were never a 14th place team in the Western Conference in terms of actual skill. They'd sort of run into a bunch of bad bounces. Kiprusoff hadn't played very well, especially in December. And then all the percentages sort of reversed themselves for a good 4 to 6 weeks for the Flames. I think they had one of the best records in the league there for a while. And right now they have one win in their last seven, so it looks like the percentages have sort of gone back downwards for them.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it just seems like it always graduates to the median. But there is a sense, I think, among Flames fans, and you mentioned it on Flames Nation, I think when you were quoting King Lear there for a while, that there is a sense that maybe there's something happening here.
Yeah, it's really hard to get a handle of just because they're all over the map this year. I mean, they were dreadful for the first, two or three months. They were one of the best teams in the league for a couple of weeks there, maybe 2 months. And now they're back to struggling to win again. And, I mean, they've had actually a couple of good games where they've lost their game in Los Angeles. I thought they probably could have won that game. And then they went into San Jose and just got their clock clean. I mean, it wasn't even close. I think the scoring chance count that night was 26-9. because I count all the scoring chances for the, and that's not even in the same realm. So the thing with the Flames is, and this has been true of them for the last couple of years, is they tend to beat up on the weaker teams in both the East and West. They're capable of consistently beating, you know, teams below them in the standings, but they have a hard time competing with the elite teams, and I don't think that's going to change going forward.
But their last six games, including tonight, are, you know, you've got the Oilers twice, you've got St. Louis in there. They should be able to come out of there 4-2-5-1. Is that enough?
I don't think that will be enough. I mean, the issue with Flames is they need probably both Dallas and Anaheim to fall off a bit. They've both been winning a lot more than the Flames have recently. So even if the Flames have a good record down the stretch here, they're going to need one or both of those teams to go 500 or worse. So their fate really isn't in their own hands. I mean, they do have a favorable schedule here because they have, you know, Edmonton and Colorado. I mean, no heavy hitters left except for Vancouver on the last day. But they are going to need some help for sure.
Kent, the Flames, no matter what they do this summer, they're going to be a veteran team next year because they've got so many contracts signed for the next year. There have been examples in NHL and sports history of teams who are veteran and they get even more veteran. The 66-67 Leafs, the Detroit Tigers did that for a time. Philadelphia Phillies did it successfully as well. Is there a sense that the rebuild is going to start this summer with Jay Feaster, or might this be the idea that maybe there's another year left in this group?
I think that's what's going to happen this summer, Alan. They have a lot of guys locked into contracts. They don't have a lot of kids who could maybe come in and displace any of them. There's a lot of no-trade clauses, of course. So it's going to be, even if, I mean, Feaster hasn't come out and said, yeah, we're going to tear this down and start over. So, I mean, even if he wanted to do that, he would be pretty well handcuffed this summer. So, and I mean, next summer, that's when a lot of these contracts go away. Corey Saric is gone. I believe Alex Kotelik is done. Nicholas Hagman is done. They got a lot of guys, you know, finishing up here, and a lot of cap space will become open. So I think they might just tread water this coming season, you know, re-sign a couple of guys where they can, manage the cap as they can, see what they got, and then really rejig everything if they have to the summer after.
I asked Fenwick this question, and he said that he'd be okay with them dealing Kiprusoff among the veteran group. Is there a possibility they might do something like that, like sort of like borrow from the current roster a little bit to pay for the future, or is that you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound?
I think that would makes sense. I can't get a read on whether the management is willing to do that or not. They certainly weren't willing to do that under Sutter, but you know, I don't even know if Feaster is going to be the guy this summer, so it's really hard to say, yeah, they're going to do this or that. Personally, I think they should consider selling one of their major assets right now, depending on the market, of course. We always have to have the caveat that, you know, the return is important, but you know, I agree with Matt. If they could trade Kiprusoff first amongst, you know, three main guys, Aginla, Regier, Kiprusoff, that's the guy I would go with.
And I wasn't aware of this, and you know, I try to follow the Flames as much as possible. It's like know your enemy. But I wasn't aware that Feaster is an interim guy, and he hasn't had that taken off of the nameplate. So there's a possibility they'd go out and shop for a new GM in the summer?
That seems to be. I mean, otherwise, I don't understand why they would stick Feaster with the interim tag. They were very adamant about him sort of being just the acting GM and not the actual GM when he took the position in December. They haven't come out and said, nope, he's the guy. They've just sort of had him hanging around minding the store. So I don't know if he's just the guy taking care of things while they look around, or I'm not sure, but I think there's definitely a chance that they're going to go shopping for someone else.
Is there a lot? I know Greg Nemish played his. Let me ask you about that. Nemish played his first NHL game. How did he look, and how do they project him? Do they project him onto next year's roster?
I don't think so. He didn't look too bad. He played on a sort of a kid line, which was a fourth unit with another kid named Lance Boma. He got scored on pretty twice in his first two shifts, I think, but it was one of those situations where you can't point the finger at the kid. It's just, you know, bang-bang play type stuff. But I wasn't very impressed with Nemish in the earlier this season. I saw him in preseason and stuff. He looked like a kid well underwater. But, I mean, he's had an okay season in the AHL. I think he crested 30 points in 70 games, which isn't very impressive. But the Abbotsford Heat were very low on firepower this year, so he actually ended up being the second highest scorer on the team. But as far as next year, I don't think he's quite there yet as an everyday guy. And as we've mentioned, it's a pretty full roster anyway. So he would really have to take a few steps forward to unseat that, I think.
The Flames are a difficult team to follow if you're not a fan of them in regard to prospects, because they do like to do the Detroit Red Wing idea, which is have the guy play on the farm for a couple of years and get his feet wet as a pro. There are no Giordanos down there. There's nobody that we should the Flames Nation is waiting to see emerge as a real top drawer talent at the NHL level.
No, there doesn't seem to be. I mean, we may talk about TJ Brody in that conversation, just because he had a very good preseason. He passed the guys on the depth chart just with his season. He had an excellent junior career, and he's actually, I think, the third highest scorer on the farm team right now, and he hasn't even played as many games because he actually played the Flames for a brief stint at the start of the year. So he's one of the few guys to actually get excited about. He's only 20 or 21, and the only other guy I would really suggest is exciting is Tim Eriksson, who plays in the Swedish Elite League, and he's been playing 20 to 25 minutes a night there during their playoff run. So we haven't seen him in North America yet, and you never know how they're gonna acclimate. But I think he's gonna split the pond, and we're gonna see him coming up.
Yeah, I've followed him a little bit because he's on the same team as, I believe, same team as Adam Larson, and he really is playing some important minutes for them, and he does look like a player that the Flames fans can look forward to. And I don't want to put you on the spot here. I looked for it, and the Flames have their first-round pick this summer, right?
They do, yeah.
Okay. Do they have I know the Oilers have their third for the Stamkos deal. Do they have their second-rounder, or is it an option to another team, or where is that?
Second-rounder, no, they don't. Okay. I forget which of the trades it was traded. It was either for Rene Bork or it was for Wayne Primo. They traded a package to Toronto to get rid of Wayne Primo, basically, because his contract was poor. And they sent over a second rounder in that trade. I'm guessing that's the one. But, yeah, they only have one pick inside the top 100 this summer.
I asked this of Matt and Fenwick, and I think it's interesting because I wasn't aware until I started getting ready for our conversation today that the Flames are really so close to the cap for next year as well. And they do have some free agents in Tanguay, Glenn Cross, Morrison, and Babchuk. Those are the front line UFAs that I recall. Of those four, which one is the one that hurts the most to lose?
That's a good question. It's probably going to be Curtis Glenn Cross. He has been an excellent driver of possession ever since we signed him. Thanks for that, by the way.
yeah, no problem.
I mean, he's never really faced top line opposition, so it's not like he's a Selke winner or anything. But he's just been. I mean, it's nice to have a guy who can play 15 minutes a night, 10 minutes a night. You know, always has the puck going north. Scores 15 to 20 goals from without a lot of, you know, cushy circumstances. So, I mean, he's a very good player, but he's probably going to have to go to the free market, and he's probably going to get a pretty good contract. So, and as you say, the Flames are cap crunched, and it's going to be tough for them to afford him.
Ken, thank you so much for this.
Thanks, Alan.
Okay, that's Kent Wilson from Flames Nation. He's becoming a regular here. This was a good update on the Calgary Flames, and this is a big weekend for them. And then, of course, there's like 15 days left in the National Hockey League season. It's coming down very quickly now, and these playoff teams are going to sort themselves out very quickly. I think probably by the time we get together next weekend, things will be very settled or pretty close to settled. We still have Ken Simpson to talk to, but I wanted to give you an update. The Oil Kings are in action again tonight here on Team 1260, 7:30 game start. But if you're an Edmonton Oilers fan and you're online scooting around looking for where your CHL Oiler draft picks are playing. In the queue, it's Jeremy Blaine and Olivier Waugh. They play for Acadie Bathurst. They played last night. Waugh got blown out of the game, and it was a loss against Victoria Tigers. And it's a very interesting series that probably will go seven, but you would have hoped that the Acadie Bathurst Titan would have played a little better last night. For the OHL, Ryan Martindale and the Ottawa 67 start their playoff series tonight against Sudbury. Ottawa finished second in their conference. They're in an offensive powerhouse in a very powerful league, and they should go through. So you might want to follow those two. And then the WHL, there's almost not a series in the Western Hockey League that doesn't have Edmonton Oilers prospect involved. Curtis Hamilton and the Saskatoon Blades, they got lucky with their travel schedule in the first round. They play PA Raiders in game one of their series tonight. The Blades scored 310 goals. They should have no problems against PA. Now you say that, right? But it should be a pretty interesting series to follow if you're a fan of the Edmonton Oilers, because there should be lots of goals. Christian Pelz and Cameron Abney got into action last night with the Oil Kings against the Red Deer Rebels, and I've seen Abney a couple of times at Oil Kings games, and he never looked as impressive as he did last night. And I think that's one of the first questions I'm going to ask our friend here, Kent Simpson. Cameron Abney really did look like a power forward last night, scored a goal for the Edmonton Oil Kings against the Red Deer Rebels. That series goes tonight again, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins was a terror in the third period, and he'll be this big subject matter for that series. Tyler Bunns and the Medicine Hat Tigers drew a tough assignment in Brandon. They lost last night. Bunns gave up six goals, I believe it was. Hit the second-best save percentage during the regular year in the Western Hockey League, and there's a lot of hope that the Tigers will go deep enough. Not really sure whether Tyler Pitlick, the high second-round pick for the Oilers, will get into action during the playoffs. He had an injury and missed the rest of the regular season. Drew Zerwanka and Kootenay Ice face off against Moose Jaw in the first round. The Warriors won last night in an upset, 4-0. And then Martin Marinson and Prince George are the underdogs against Kelowna. They lost last night, and he's stumbling a little bit down the stretch, struggling a little bit, but a guy who the Edmonton Oilers think very highly of, and it could be playing for Oklahoma City and someone we should watch for at training camp in the fall. Among those draft eligibles who played last night, Nugent Hopkins was 2-2, plus 4 points and a plus one. Jonathan Huberdeau was 0-4-4. Plus two, and Landeskog had a couple of goals, 3 points, plus three in a loss last night, and Dougie Hamilton was 1-1-2 and plus two in the same game, and Couturier scored as well. Coming up in the next segment, we'll talk a little bit about the draft, a little bit about Keegan Lowe, and a lot about the Edmonton Oil Kings with Kent Simpson.